Hi, I'm Katie, and you're listening to the Home Ed Voices podcast, where I talk to people about their home education adventures and experiences here in the UK. This is episode number 6, and this week I'm talking to Philippa, Exit Supermum on Instagram. Since Philippa is a second generation home educator, we talk about how home education has changed over the last 25 years. We also talk about how home education gives children the space to be wholly themselves and protects them from peer pressure and being labelled. And Book Rex turns into a bit of an Astrid Lindgren love fest when Philippa's Read Aloud turns out to be one of my favourite books ever. And so now, on with the interview. This week I'm talking to Philippa. Hello Philippa, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Oh, you're welcome Katie, it's lovely to be here. I'm looking forward to this new podcast and, yeah, British accents.
I know.
British recommendations.
Who knew? It's all very exciting. Right, I'm going to start with, tell me a bit about your family.
Okay, I am married to Andy and we have 4 children. That's 2 girls, 2 boys. My oldest daughter is Unity. She's just turned 11. And then I've got 2 boys, Esri, who is 9, and Breeze, who is 6. And then the baby of the family to round it all up is Talitha, and she is 3. So, yeah, keeping me busy.
And we, names.
Yeah, well, we started Unusual with Unity, and we kind of had to follow suit with the others.
Yeah, it's always the win. You don't realise when you're getting to your first child, like, oh, we've kind of committed to this, okay.
Exactly. They've got more, you know, most of them got usual middle names, so they can swap if they don't like it, you know, when they get to it. So yeah, and we live in a market town in Essex, not too far away from London, so got so much on our doorstep we can go and see. So yeah,
that's excellent. How did you start home educating?
Well, I was actually homeschooled myself all the way through, so I have never ever been to school, which is and the more adult I get, the more I realize how unusual that was, and how much I've got out of the experience. So I'm really, really blessed in that. And so that was definitely a big influencing factor. But then, you know, so many reasons, like most home educators, so many reasons why we home educate, why we take the plunge. So didn't really like the fundamental methods of the way schools are run in this modern era, and you know, I didn't like the way you can individualize education. And my husband went to public school, and although in some would say that's a huge privilege, it didn't really give him a kind attitude towards even public school. So you know, we thought, well, homeschooling was the way for us. We're Christians as well, so we just wanted to, you know, pass on our beliefs in as natural way as possible. So living life together rather than all separated, going everywhere else, makes that a lot more easier. And yeah, just so many reasons.
Yeah. Was it something that, because you'd been home educated yourself, you always considered, you know, like you'd always thought you would do when it came to you having a family? Or was it still something you had to kind of, I don't know, think about? I mean, you have to think about it anyways, but you know what
yeah
I mean.
To be honest, I didn't think about it as much, because when I was thinking, we're literally like 2 doors down from the local primary school, so had we sent our kids to school, it would have been tremendously convenient. But I was thinking, if I was to send my child to school, for me personally, it would have been probably as difficult as somebody who was school educated and thinking about homeschooling. It was that radical a difference to send my kids to school. So, I didn't really think about it too much. I love being with the kids as well. They were tiny, so it's kind of like, why do anything different?
So
I didn't have that whole hurdle of to home educate or not to home educate that obviously a lot of parents do have. So that put me at an advantage, I suppose.
Yeah, totally.
So having said that, some of my siblings won't be home educating, so they, you know, it's a personal choice, and you know, it's not like that for everyone who is homeschooled. So yeah. But for us, it worked.
Yeah, that makes sense. The obvious question, I guess, is how are things different now compared to, you know, when you were home educating?
Are massively different. I mean, just with the internet wasn't even around when my parents started home educating in the late 80s.
Yeah.
We didn't have a personal computer till I was 12, and that was still, you know, early compared to when my peers were getting it, you know, their own PCs at home and stuff. And Facebook really seems to have changed stuff just in, like, just from when I've been starting my homeschooling with my 11-year-old, just the stuff there for meeting up and groups to go to and museums to go to, activities. It's just almost too much than the good old simple days where everything was mail order and, you know.
How did you find other home educators? Like
back then,
in the 80s and 90s, or the sort of late
80s. Well, my family was a little unusual in the fact we didn't mix a lot. My mum was an introvert, and I think she found just mixing lots with other home educators to be just not her comfort zone.
Yeah,
which is absolutely fine. And to be honest, there were a lot of us. I'm the oldest of nine, so we were one of these huge unusual homeschooling families.
Right.
And so with just sibling relationships, there was so much going on. So I remember going to do, you know, field trips with other homeschool families, but apart from that, there wasn't the same socialization that my kids have now, for instance.
No, because it's just harder to keep in touch with each other.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, pen friends was really important. That was an important way for me to socialize back then. And yeah, the internet, so you didn't have instant messaging or anything else, but, you know, I survived.
Pen friends were really important to me when I was, particularly as a teenager. We used to swap music.
Yeah.
We used to send tapes to each other. And, like, I had friends, you know, I went to school and I had friends in school, but I still was, like, glued to, like, when is the postman going to bring the next letter from home?
Yeah, it was so exciting, isn't it, to get your mail through the post. And I remember when the Iron Curtain fell, somehow or other, I have no idea how it happened, but my mum got me a pen friend in Russia who was trying to get her English to become better, you know, in writing and stuff. And she was about the same age as me. And I remember her saying about music, on the music note, you know, oh, I love the Beatles. And I remember sitting there opening this section thinking, my goodness, she knows about the Beatles in Russia? I thought they were closed up from the world. So that was a memorable moment with one of my pen friends.
That's really good. It's like, you know, I mean, I guess there obviously is still international pen friends. And you actually see that quite a lot on Instagram where people are like, hey, does anybody have kids, you know, other home educators or whatever? Or
homeschoolers? In fact, my oldest daughter has just literally started writing to a little girl in Idaho, same age as her, left-handed as well, so they've got that in common. And, you know, just exchanging information about where they live, and it's really lovely as well because they really have to think. And watching Unity, and she's thinking about what she can tell this other little girl about, you know, what's different in her country to maybe what she's the other girl's experiences in America and stuff. So yeah, it's really good. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
So we've kind of touched on bits of it, but what do you love about home educating?
Oh, cheap holidays.
Oh, God, yeah.
Less queuing at Legoland.
Yes. Do right.
Yeah, the really important things, right?
They feel really important to me. It's like we get to the summer holidays and it's like, I don't want to do anything, really.
Yeah, I don't want to go anywhere. I want the break, but I don't want to have to go anywhere.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, so no, I just love the flexibility, really. And I think it's difficult for me realizing just how much my kids are benefiting from, you know, being home educated and the flexibility, because I never had that school experience where I had to go to certain classes and, you know, stand up, sit down and whatever else. My kids actually recently, they've been saying, I'll be saying something about what happens in school, and they look at me and they're getting a slightly cheeky stage, and they're just like, but Mum, you never went to school, how do you know? And I'm like, yeah, okay, well, I've read enough books and stuff, so I think I might have a feeling. But you see, I don't have that on the ground experience. So so I just love the flexibility they're getting, and they can flourish at their own pace, you know. That's just not to be taken for granted, I suppose. My oldest son, I'm pretty sure he's dyslexic, he's still not reading fluently, and I was just thinking the other day, you know, if he was in school, he would be struggling so hard, even if he had extra help, just to keep up with the with the pace, and he'd be, I think, year four, I think, now. And he'd had that label on him, which he doesn't even have to think about now. I can say, hey, look, dyslexic brains are amazing, and look how you're using your engineering brain to use Lego. That's partly because, you know, your brain works in that way. And, you know, he doesn't have to have that kind of pressure. So
you can say that stuff and not be trying to counteract.
Yeah.
Kind of like, oh, you're in the bottom set for these things. Did you see that there was an article in the BBC, which I'll link to in the show notes, because it seems relevant. It was talking about how streaming in schools is like basically crushing children's like sense of self.
I can believe it.
They don't, you know, they're not telling the kids you're in the bottom set, but they know that, like, the
kids aren't stupid.
No, they know what it means to be on, like, I think that, you know, this is the guy who's ended up actually being a deputy head in a primary school, and he's like, right. I knew what it meant to be on the oblong table, and we messed about because, well, we were the oblong table, and we were never going to be, you know, we were basically never going to amount to anything. And even as an adult, he's like, I kind of can't believe that I've done something with my life, which is awful. Like, that you can start that at five, you know.
Yeah, so sad. Yeah, we've just got so much less pressure. They don't have to worry about what their peers are thinking the same way, do they? Because, you know, they're with a whole group of kids who are already unusual. Not in a bad way, but we're just, home-educated kids don't fit into a particular mould, do they? Because, you know, but that's part of the reason why we're homeschooling, I suppose, for a lot of us.
I think they don't have to. They're not, because they spend, you know, they spend a fair amount of time with their peers, but not massive chunks of time with their peers. Nobody's trying to smush each other. Everybody, like, they go and hang out with each other, and then they come home and they do other stuff. And so it's not like, oh, well, you like that. Like, how could you like, you know, so they're not all smushing each other down, being like, no, being a boy is like this and being a girl is like this. They can fully be themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And it also gives a chance for the family culture to get a hold as well, in the sense of noticing about homeschool families is every family's different. And it tends to reflect the parents a little bit, doesn't it? Like, if you've got a really literature-based mum, quite often at least one of her children will be that way inclined. If you've got an arty dad or just or a math science family, you can really have that kind of unique gelling together that comes through shared interest, which I don't think you'd get as easily in school if from the age of 4 or 5 you're already being fragmented for much of the week.
Yeah, because you have to cram that all into weekends, really.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what's the hardest part?
I suppose there are always going to be different challenges. I've started looking at, you know, secondary school type stuff and thinking, okay, where are we going with this? And that's, so I suppose with different seasons, there are going to be different challenges, especially as you're like, it's the first time you've ever done this, you've ever done this parenting gig. And then on top of this, you're doing homeschool as well. And it's like, oh my goodness. But I think probably the most persistent challenge I have is just being with kids 24/7. Which sounds really bad because I love my children to pieces, and I'm so grateful that I've got this privilege of being able to home educate them. But at the same time, that is definitely, you know, the hardest bit for me.
You have to take, I think the thing is that you end up having to really take kind of, I know self-care is like everywhere at the moment, but you have to take self-care really seriously, and you have to, I mean, I think, you know, you end up having to sort of look at your schedule and say, okay, well, where can, you know, particularly with your partner or whatever, if you can, and so say, okay, well, where can I have just time alone? Or like
absolutely,
time where I can just like not be parenting because you're parenting all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember just in the early days, so I was just starting homeschooling, and I was determined to do it properly, and I was a lot more structured than I've ended up being. And I was just like, I'm really missing the adult interaction that you get in the workplace. And I just thought, okay, well, if I think of this as my, not 9 to 5 job, because home education never stops really, but you know, that kind of job, if I see this as my career, it is a job, isn't it? And whatever way you homeschool, be it unschooling, structured, semi-structured or whatever, it still is taking up that period of time that other mums or dads are out in the workplace pursuing a particular career. So I just thought, well, if I view this as my job, then I'm not going to resent the fact that I'm only with preschoolers stroke reception age children all day. because I don't know, it'd be different for different personalities, I suppose, but for me that helped change my mindset to thinking, you know, thinking more, not even professionally about it, but just it's a job, and so therefore I'm going to work in some breaks, because that's what I would do in the workplace. I would have a half hour break or a lunch break or something. Yeah. So I didn't feel as guilty about needing those breaks then.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the thing about home educating is, you know, you are taking responsibility, particularly when you're the primary, like, home educator. Like, you know, you're taking responsibility for your kids' education. And, like, you know, regardless of kind of what methods you use, or whether you use a method or not, or whatever, like, you're still the person who has to think about it and be, you know, looking at sort of what they're doing and seeing where you can, you know, where it's useful to add things, or where you want to take, you know, like, you know, make more space, not take things away. I mean, like, make more space for things and things like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but, definitely.
You know, that's why, you know, being kind of, I guess, kind of professional about it doesn't mean, and therefore everyone sits in rows, and, you know, and it's all like school, because it's not. Like, even the, you know, probably, you know, the most radical homeschoolers, like, they have to take it really, they have to take it really, really seriously. Mm. You know, nobody is doing this because they think it's easy.
Yeah, you
get so much joy from it, but it's not easy.
No.
So how do you, you're saying about breaks, I was going to say, so how do you, but how do you kind of try and...
I think it's something I'm learning. I'm still learning it as I go along. And obviously the age of the children changes as well. So we're just heading towards the preteen years or we are in the preteen years, and my oldest is needing a lot more time to talk. And generally at the end of the day, I don't want to talk. I've given everything. So it's just kind of realizing, okay, well, you know, I've got to go with the flow and what the kids need. So how can I balance that with what I need to do a good job, I suppose, or to try and do a good job as much as I'm able. So, you know, sometimes my husband will hang on to the kids and I'll go out to the coffee shop for an hour or two, because I love my coffee. So, that's one way. And I'll just try and just literally do something that's for me, you know, read a book or something. I found early on play dates and coffees with other homeschooling mums was really important, just to have, you know, the kids can play with Duplo or then the Lego and then the Minecraft or whatever they're into.
Yeah.
And you're there in the background, so you kind of like interrupted quite a lot, but you know, but then we can have a coffee or a cup of tea and a slice of cake and just chat about what's important to us, what's troubling us, what our victories have been, and you know, that kind of sharing the journey is so important.
And you need to share the journey with people who are actually going through it, because they
exactly it. yeah that's it. So I'm not particularly a morning person, but sometimes I just force myself to get up half an hour before the kids, just so that I've had that time to go on Instagram or Facebook or read my Bible or whatever I need that day.
Yeah.
So that I can just do that without voices needing me or someone needing breakfast. So that's, although it's not my natural kind of way to wake up, I have found that helps sometimes. That's good. It's just mainly trying not to run on empty, isn't it? You've got to fill your own needs, make sure mentally you're as sane as you can be.
And then
you've got more to give to your kids and the homeschool community and your wider community as a whole, I suppose.
Yeah. So what is a typical day in the life of your family?
I read this question. I was like, oh my goodness, what is a typical day? Is there such a thing?
Sometimes it isn't.
Yeah, I know. So we kind of, I did like a time schedule once, just to see where my time was going, because I felt like I was running out of time all the time. And I plotted in like a super structured homeschooler at that point, all the kind of half an hour for this child, half an hour for that child, meal planning, meal prep or whatever, and how long different classes took, just to get an idea. I don't follow it, but you know, it just gives me an idea of where the time is going. And I worked out that I need at least 2 days at home to keep everything ticking properly at this moment, at this season in life. Everything can change. So we kind of have activity days where we go out and do our swimming with other home edders. Some retired family members, they do their music teachers, so we do have like a day of lessons with them. So we'll take a bag of school books to their house and and the kids will either play in the garden or the greenhouse, or, you know, they do work with me one-on-one. So that's yeah. definitely one of the days. That's a typical outside day. Mm-hmm. But at home, I don't know, I've got an idea of where I want to be, but it's kind of the ideal would be schoolwork in the morning, which would be like one-on-one work with me while the kids take it in turns to play with the toddler.
Yeah.
And I try to do a morning basket with different books, and I've got it all set up. It's all raring to go, memory work, bit poetry, Shakespeare, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I sat down and did it with the kids yesterday. I was like, oh, I must do this today. And one of the kids said, oh, actually, Mum, this is just a basket. You can't call it morning basket, because it was lunchtime. So we do a bit of morning basket schoolwork generally in the morning. Yeah. And then the afternoon is more the social stuff, having friends over, maybe errands, catching up with work that needs a bit more time.
Yeah.
But anchors in the day have really helped. Like, for instance, doing the kids know their morning five. So the morning kind of the teeth and the hair and the room and all those bits. So they know how to do that now. And then we'll have a quiet time when we're at home on our own after lunch. That really helps kind of get everyone together and centered and ready for the rest of the day. And then in the evening, it'll be like a quick daddy dash before daddy comes home from work. So we'll do a quick tidy up, hoover, and it's amazing what difference. It's amazing what a difference a quick vacuum makes. The whole place looks great, and for my sanity, that's really handy. So so we've got into a little routine, and you know, they'll get half an hour of or longer actually, of Netflix or something once everything's ship shape.
Yeah.
It just helps keep the flow of, you know, life not get too overwhelming too often. So that's probably a typical day. And I probably haven't answered your question. But that's roughly what it looks like.
Excellent. So what's going on for home educators in your area?
There is a lot. Facebook seems to be the main source, and if you're a home educator, just going onto a Facebook group, and you soon realise they're all kind of linked. So there must be five or six Facebook groups that cover my part of Essex, and they're all, there's so much going on with all the, you know, it only takes one home educator to organise one thing and put it up there. And if everyone does that kind of thing, just one thing a year, and there's loads of stuff then, you know, to be going. So we've got things like science classes just started in our town. Well, I don't actually have the time to go to that, but there's science classes, there's ice skating, there's parkour, just loads of and everything in between, and all within like half an hour's drive, which is totally doable. And then if you're in a city, then you've got loads of museums. So we're right on the end of one of the underground lines, so it's easy to get into London.
Oh,
and brilliant. And so just museums and galleries. We're going to go to the National Gallery in July with a group of homeschoolers to go and hear a talk on some paintings there. So it's just, you know, so much going on. It's just getting that balance so that for me personally, I'm actually at home long enough to, you know, fill some workbooks in.
That's the standard response is like, there's so much going on. Like, you have to balance how much you can afford to do
and
time at home.
Exactly.
To make sure you're not just that, because you could, you genuinely, I mean, pretty much everywhere you could be out all of the time.
Oh, yeah. I think the whole bugbear of so many people, oh, how are your kids going to get socialised? Like, hang on, actually. My kid this week has far too much socialisation. I need some downtime.
Yeah.
So it's all good. But Facebook does seem to be the hub of where to go. So that's one of the main reasons why I'm on there now. It's just, you know, Yahoo groups were the way to go forwards. But I think Facebook's just a bit more personal. So that seems to be where people are going.
Yeah, I mean, we still, our area still does run a Yahoo group.
But yeah, mine too.
It's not supported. Do you know what I mean? I mean, like, it's not technically supported. It's supported by the people who want to use it, but it's not, you know, it's clunky. People put stuff into the diary and it doesn't turn up and all of that kind of business. It's really hard.
And I really appreciate seeing a picture of someone, you know, a face to go with the post. Yeah. Just makes it a bit more personal. And when I last looked, Yahoo still didn't have that feature. So
they still don't have that feature.
And they still don't have that feature.
Which does mean that when you're meeting up with people you haven't met before, it is a bit like, I will wear a red carnation. I will be wearing this kind of coat. And I'll have these children, you know, like there'll be X number of children around me. See if you can spot me in the park, yeah, kind of thing.
That's it. Oh, funny.
Do you have any recommendations for other home ed parents?
I'm big into podcasts at the moment. So like washing up, hanging the washing, I'll try and get an extra 15 minutes of my favourites in. So I think my favourite to recommend would be the Read Aloud Revival, which I know you've joined the membership recently, haven't you?
I've been a member for quite a while.
Oh, have you? Oh, yeah. Sorry, I only saw your
IG post recently. Yeah, I mentioned on Instagram.
Yeah.
I haven't done any of the author. A lot of the authors, I didn't know who they were.
Yeah, because a lot of Americans.
A lot of Americans. Although, interestingly, I've gone back and gone, you know, with a few people, with a few authors and gone, oh, they did one. Oh, I can go back and watch that.
Yeah.
So, yes, we watched the S.D. Smith one about writing.
My daughter would be so jealous if she knew that he'd done one. But yeah, so we're not members, but I love the podcast. And I think Sarah's voice is just so enthusiastic. Sarah McKenzie's voice, so enthusiastic.
Yeah.
Even if I've had a down day, I'll come away with that kind of, oh, yeah, I've got this. I so haven't, but I feel like I have.
She's great like that. She's got this complete infectious, kind of joyful voice.
She really has. So I also really like Scalay Sisters. That's done by a couple of Americans. Actually, three. Pam Barnhill of Morning Basket is one of those. I really enjoy listening to that. And that always stretches my brain cells, which don't take much to be stretched, to be honest. But yeah, so those are my two go-to podcasts at the moment. And then when I'm in the car, I'm really enjoying Brains On with the kids, and that's, have you heard of that one?
Yes, I have. We haven't really used it, but I know.
Yes, so the kids are really enjoying that, except my Apple thing has been updated recently and stopped working in the car plug-in thing, so it's really frustrating. So I'm going back to an old iPod thing. So so Brains On, and then another one that simulates Tumble, that's really good as well. So both science related, so we get the science into the kids and all the good discussions that come when your kids are strapped in the car and you've got to drive half an hour somewhere. So that's definitely one of my ways of homeschooling.
I think it's called
road schooling. I haven't heard of that term. That's really cool. I like that. Really like that.
It's like, as you say, when you're traveling around different events and stuff, like it's a prime opportunity to listen to podcasts, to listen to audiobooks and all of that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, make the most of it.
Too right.
Yeah. So
do you have any read aloud recs?
I am reading aloud to my husband actually in the car journeys, because we had a few long car journeys. I'm reading Sarah McKenzie's Read Aloud Family. That's really good. Lots of information about why reading aloud is the best, and do as much of it as possible, even if you do nothing else. So that's definitely one. I asked the kids actually what they considered to be their favourite read aloud, and surprisingly, most of, I think the older two who remember it, they both said the same thing, and that was Brendan Teith. I can't remember what the chap's name is, but it's just literally down as BB. Mm-hmm. He's written, I think it might be Down the Bright Stream or something else, a couple of books about gnomes, which are quite sweet. But the two older children who remember reading it aloud to them, they both said, oh, Brendan Chase was brilliant. And it's about, it's a few years since I read it, and I'm going to reread it next year. But I think it's about two or three boys who bunk off school, basically, and they go and live in a forest, the British Forest. And it's all about their adventures and what butterflies they see. So real kind of gets the kids inspired about nature. Real living book, as Charlotte Mason people would say. So that's what both the older kids said when I asked them.
That's really cool. I will.
Yeah.
I will look that up, and I'll put the details into the show notes.
Yeah, it's a really sweet book. I'm reading a book at the moment to my six-year-old by the author of Pippi Longstocking. I didn't realise she did books which involve boys. Mm-hmm. Emil, I'm never sure how to pronounce it. Emil, thank you. And The Great Escape. My six-year-old is loving it. And you know when you read a book aloud and kids appear from all over the house? Mm-hmm. to listen in. Mm-hmm. So that is our, that is another current, very current read aloud that we're halfway through at the moment. And, you know, we love Swallows and Amazons, yeah, and Green Ember. My 11-year-old's got into Red Wall recently. So, you know, just books are great. So,
yeah. No, the Emile books are like, they are probably some of my very favourite books. And I only read them as read alouds to my kid. I didn't grow up with them.
Right. Yeah, me neither.
I read some Astrid Lindgren as a kid. I read Ronia the Robber's Daughter. I still have my copy of that. But I never read
Pippi Longstocking. I've not read that one yet.
Oh, it's good. It's about the daughter of a band of robbers. And then she and basically there's a castle and the lightning split it in two, I think.
Oh, wow, cool.
And they live on one side. So her band of robbers, the band of robbers that's run by her dad, live on one side. And this other band that they don't get on with live on the other. And
that's brilliant. I've got to get hold
and
of that.
They have the sort of leaders of that have a son. And they're about the same age. And so it's sort of about how they secretly become friends with each other.
Okay.
And it's really good. But, yes. That does sound good. But the Emile books are fantastic.
We were all giggling about this with the storyline. He gets a soup tureen over his head or something. Yes! And, oh, my goodness. They really enjoyed that.
The illustrations.
And I did too.
Yeah, the illustrations are done by, I'm trying to remember.
Tony Ross, I think.
Oh, you've got the Tony Ross ones.
Yeah. Definitely. Reminds me of the Princess in a Potty book that I remember from being a kid.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember. Is it My Naughty Little Princess or something? I can't remember.
I do know which one you mean. Because
I want my potty.
Yes. I think it might even be called I Want My Potty. Yeah. I can distinctly remember the front cover in my head as you're talking about it.
I have to say
about the Emile books. Is this the first one of the, because there's three.
This is the first one we've read. I don't know if it's the very first one or not.
I think it is, actually. I think that might be.
Is it? Oh, I landed on my feet there then.
What I love about it, because we actually read them in the wrong order, but it doesn't matter. The very last story of the third book.
Right.
Is actually quite. Like, everything. I don't want to. To spoil it, everything turns out okay because it's a kid's book. Like, nobody dies or anything. But he gets to be genuinely brave and you really worry about him. And it's kind of like choking emotional, because for people who haven't read these books, and they totally should because they are. Genuinely fantastic. They're so good. They're so funny.
Yeah.
But we know Emile is considered by everybody a really naughty boy. But we see him and we see that actually he's sort of a bit mischievous and he does things he shouldn't do. But there's no malice to what he does at all.
Yeah. We've just got him trapped in a woodshed and he's on like 50-something little man. Every time he's naughty, he apparently gets shut into this woodshed and he carves yet another little man. And he never does the same kind of so-called naughty thing twice.
Yeah. His mum writes them up, like, because you're reading the stories, and they're supposed to be based on like the exercise books of like where his mum has written down what she did.
Oh, are they?
Yeah,
right.
Later on they kind of talk about that, and so like you're getting like examples of all these things. But we also know that he grows up to be like the mayor of the town,
I think
he turns into this really
he's gonna turn out to be nice and stable.
So it's really
it gives us hope doesn't it,
totally.
Everyone who has an Emile in their family. I definitely have one or two of mine. I'm reading it, I'm like, don't get any ideas.
No, I'm really, really pleased you brought this up, because I adore those books so much.
Oh, I can't even remember how I found them. I found them by accident, I think.
Yes.
And we've got, in Essex, we've got such a great library system where you can go along and, you know, I'm sure most libraries have this, where you can go and order online and renew online now. But they've got this, I don't know how you call it, but on your library card, you can be put as a home educator or educating otherwise or something. And it gives you your books for 3 months without having to renew. And you can renew, as long as nobody else wants it, you can renew 7 times. So you imagine how long you can keep your favourite books.
Yeah.
So I'm still going straight to Amazon. Whenever there's a book recommendation, I go straight to the Essex Library.
Is it in the system?
It saves so much money.
Oh, goodness me, yeah. Because somebody else that I interviewed, Loveth, who is... people who are listening to this, go down and listen to Loveth's interview. She was fantastic. She was saying that she met with the LEA.
Right.
Because she deregistered her children and she was happy to be with the LEA. It was fine. And they said, well, because you're a home educator, you get twice as many library books. So genuinely, I really want to go around all of the all the counties, library systems, and say, right, what do you do for home educators?
It's different everywhere, it seems. Yeah, it really seems different, because I think my friend over in Hertfordshire, she thought she was on the same kind of system, and I don't think they had. I may be completely wrong, but she didn't seem to be able to find this option for home educators. So I don't know if it's only some councils that run it, or it seems to be very hit and miss.
I think it's probably on a council by council basis, like
what
they set up. There's no, because there's no national thing that says you have to do it, beyond the law that we, live under.
Yeah.
There's nothing sort of specifically that says, and therefore they get, these perks. It's up to kind of, each county. But yeah, now I want to go to, I probably am going to my library this afternoon. I have to nudge them and say, go on, what do I get for being a home educator?
Yeah, exactly.
I want more books, and I want to take them out for longer, and I don't want to have to pay fines.
Exactly, no fines. No fines. 3 months, 14 books on each card. I've got at least 5 cards full now. And I just had to ask for my husband's card to have this feature, which I'd never use because otherwise I'd get fines on it.
Yeah.
And so I've got space for an extra 14 books when I go to the library later today, which I'm really looking forward to.
I think particularly when they get, as the kids are getting older, it's actually harder to take library books back.
Yeah.
Like, no, I haven't finished reading it, and they haven't read it yet. Like, so, you know, it hasn't gone through everybody who wants to go through, and then
exactly.
They want to read it again. And so, I do that. Like, we I use our online system to book out books. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to buy it. Can I book it out? Do they have
exactly.
it? I'll book it out.
And then the real favourites, I'll just go and buy or put on their Amazon birthday list or something, and then we get it for good, as it were. But we need a league system, really, of all the different libraries, county council type things, and what they offer.
Particularly if people are on borders, because often
you're
on the border of a county or near that county, you can use both counties, and they're quite fine about that. Which, of course, although to be honest, that sounds, we're not on the border of a county, so that's not going to happen for us. But also, I would be worried that I will have even more library books to keep up with.
Which ones go where?
Yes, exactly. At least if I know it's a library book, I can just take it back to the library and it will be fine.
Exactly.
Not having to work through which county.
Right, library, exactly.
So much for talking to me today. This is
You're very welcome, Katie. It's been a pleasure.
Where can people find you online?
Online, I am on Instagram at @exitsupermum. Everyone's got this perception that homeschoolers are supermums, and we are in some ways, but it's, anybody can do it, really. So I was like, get rid of the supermum mentality. Any mum is a supermum, so that's where that tag came from, as it were. So, but homeschoolers. Yeah, it's for anyone, isn't it, really?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay then. Bye.
Bye. And there you go. If you want to find out more about any of the things we talked about in the episode, or to leave a comment, please go to the show notes on the blog at learninginanoxfordkitchen.co.uk and click on the link to the Home Ed Voices podcast, or follow the link on Instagram at Home Ed Voices podcast, or Twitter at Home Ed Voices. This is episode 6. If you want to support the show, please rate and review at Apple Podcasts, as it helps more people to find out about it. The Home Ed Voices podcast is an independent production and is created, hosted and produced by me, Katie Hanrot. The podcast theme tune is Hope for Tomorrow by C-Stock. You can subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher or anywhere else where podcasts are found. I'll be back with episode 7 in 2 weeks, and until then, here's to more Home Ed adventures.